Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I am George. Goes is in front of me. It's a Monday. It's September 16th. First of all, to all of our friends down south, happy Mexican Independence Day. And boy, did we feel it this weekend in Vegas. There was a lot of Mexicans in town. It was a huge weekend, and it was a huge weekend of fights. Now, those fights did not take place here in Las Vegas, but, well, one did, Tyson Fury, boxing. But we're talking about mixed martial arts. UFC was in Vancouver for UFC Fight Night, Cowboy versus Gaethje, also known as UFC Fight Night 158, also known as UFC on ESPN Plus 16. So we'll talk about that. We had some great fights, a little bit more of a shakeup in the lightweight division, which has been very, very exciting throughout this past summer. I think things are getting some clarity there. Some eye pokes took place. We'll talk about that. Some movement in the light heavyweight division. Some guys were back after, you know, back in the win column, and that was good to see. Mr. Olympia was in town, aside from the Tyson Fury fight, which was also in town, and that was closer than people thought it was going to be, goes. So lots to discuss there. Of course, the news nuggets that we'll save till the end. How was your weekend, goes?
That was fun. It was a mixture of a little work and a lot of fun, and then a little bit of chilling. It was a perfect weekend, now that I think about it.
We saw the big boss as well.
Yeah, Chris big Perone. Boss is here. It was fun.
So lots to discuss here on the MMA Junkie Radio Show. Buckle up, folks. Here we go. All you junkie fans, listen up. If you're looking for a sports podcast that's outside the box, where the topics are trending and all of the people speak their minds, listen to our brothers and sister over at For the Win Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and popular apps.
And to catch up with the latest news in golf, check out the Forward Press Podcast by Golf Week.
As a matter of fact, to see all the USA Today Network podcasts, including podcasts from NFL and NBA, go to podcast.usatoday.com. Goes, I've always felt that a Monday show just has to start with the results. There is lots to talk about, but let's get to the results. Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Justin Gaethje. That fight was still good. I wouldn't put it in the barn burner slobber knocker category, but it was still fun to watch because it was tense. Were you not on the edge of your seat?
I was, but it's something about the way Justin Gaethje fights where he just comes forward and he shows no fear.
Right.
Even though Cowboy on the other end was throwing bombs, he just didn't give you that. Like, Justin's face didn't give you that feeling that he could be knocked out because he just had no
fear. I can agree
with
that.
You know, like, Cowboy was actually throwing back. He was throwing back pretty hard. But Justin just had this way, this Mike Tyson way of moving forward where it just made you think, there's nothing this guy can do to him that's going to hurt him at all.
Right, yeah. And, you know, Cowboy ate some leg kicks, and I thought those might slow him down sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure Cowboy, you know, coming from a Muay Thai background, being a guy that's thrown his fair share of leg kicks, he's probably used to that. In fact, he was checking a few. He was actually raising his leg, and he was making Gaethje miss with a few. But, yeah, you're right. Cowboy was game for a lot longer than I thought he was. I thought either Cowboy was going to have a beat on him and have a game plan that was coming to come out of right field that none of us expected, or that Gagey was going to do kind of what Gagey was going to do. Except I don't know. I felt like Cowboy was kind of in it. You know what I mean? And I felt like the longer it went, the longer it could. I could lean towards Cowboy. It doesn't mean I would still feel like Gagey would wither, because Gagey's, you know, he's a 5-round fighter as well. But still, I was expecting kind of like an early dominance out of Gagey, and for Cowboy to either get put away quick or for something maybe to happen unexpected. Like maybe this fight gets taken to the ground. I know Gagey always brags about his D1 wrestling and he never uses it, but Cowboy has been able to put people on the ground, and when he does, you know how dangerous it is. But alas, that did not take place. The fight ended in the first round. 4 minutes and 18 seconds into it, Justin Gagey caught Donald Cerrone with a beautiful punch that put him down. And put him down to his knees, but not completely out. But one could say, oh boy, he starched them there. Cowboy's eyes were open. They were glazed. And it looked like he could maybe shake it off and maybe grab a single and then be ready to continue. Now, all that, by all that, I mean maybe within 30 seconds to a minute. But then Gagey hits him again, you know, as Cowboy kind of gets up. And again, Cowboy kind of falls to his knees. So he's not falling completely out. He's not stiffened. He's not stumbling around. He's just in this awkward position where he maybe could grab a leg, or just kind of turtle up and maybe roll to his back as Gagey's standing over him. And the referee looks like he's trying to give Cowboy every last chance he can. The only problem is he wasn't definitive in his actions. And in doing so, he's causing Gagey to kind of pause. And then Gagey takes a few more swings. It looks like they had a quick convo. He takes a couple more swings. And only then does the referee step in. Now, look, I didn't have a problem with the way the referee gave him a little bit of that extra time, you know, to maybe see this fight play out. But I just wish he would have been a little more assertive in his actions. And I think that comes with experience. I haven't seen this referee in too many main events. And again, I'm not saying he did a poor job. It's just the first time when he went in, it looked like he wanted to finish him. And that confused Gagey. So that's not fair to Gagey. Now, Cowboy obviously was disappointed, but I think once he saw the replay and he saw, oh. Because remember, the referee reacts to what he sees. And when he saw Cowboy get hit with that punch, he was probably like, that's why he all of a sudden rushed in, because he knew this could be a finishing sequence. Then Cowboy again comes up for air, and that's when, you know, Gagey throws a few more like I described. And so all that's happening super fast. And it's one of the toughest jobs in the world, I got to imagine, and not the highest paying job. But either way, I think it was the right result. I think in the end, everybody was good. No additional damage was given, but I could see the confusion with fans, especially Cowboy fans.
I've watched it 3 or 4 times now, and my conclusion is that nobody's at fault. It's just something that kind of happens. If you're going to put any blame on it, if anyone, I'm going to put blame on Justin Gagey, because I feel like Justin Gagey, in stopping, may have almost restarted that whole process of a fighter being hurt and being that meter going down closer to being stopped. That little stop, I think, is what maybe caused that to go a little bit more. Had he just kept following up, I think the referee would have just dove in and stopped it. But the stop now makes you reevaluate things, because now Donald can kind of recover a little bit. So I think that stop might have actually caused an extra 2 shots to be thrown or to get in. Maybe 1, because I think the 3rd shot would have been what probably where the referee would have stopped. I thought the referee did an okay job.
So did I.
I thought he stuttered a little bit, but I mean, he's a human. You know, there's so much going on. I would rather him stutter and not stop a fight than just go right in and stop a fight that shouldn't have been stopped. It's up to the fighter to keep going until the referee tells him to stop. So Justin can't be reacting to what the referee's doing. You know, you can't blame that on the referee.
Well, the referee did come in kind of quick. It almost
but he didn't really like put a hand on him or anything like that. He was just moving forward. That's it. I think in Justin stopping and looking at the referee, I think that kind of screwed things up a little bit. But that's nothing that I think anybody was at fault with. I think it's just kind of the way the fight game goes.
I've always wondered about the walk-off when someone just nails somebody. If they were to walk off, let's face it, even if Donald Cerrone were to get to his feet, he'd probably stumble and maybe fall into the ref's hands.
Well, he did after the fight.
Right. And thereby, there's kind of like, at that point, you're like, oh, okay, you know, this guy's merciful. The other guy's hurt. But, again, that's a fine line, because if that doesn't happen and the referee hasn't stopped it, the referee's going to look at you and summon you back and say the fight's got to continue, you know, and which is almost what happened, except without the walk-off and, you know, all that time in between. But, mm-hmm. yeah, you're right, that hesitation is – it just threw everybody off. And I think it was the referee's – it was the way he ran towards, you know, the cluster and then stopped at the last minute. However, I thought they did brush up on arms or hands or something like that. Maybe that's the little bit that threw Gagey off. Who knows? But in the end, the result was right. And in the end, they admitted to being much more friends than they were pre-fight. I get that. But still, you kind of threw us all off. You know, it made it sound like, well, we trained together years ago. He knocked me out, but there is no friends in this game, blah, blah, blah. But towards the end, you say, man, that was difficult. I was fighting a friend. It's like, well, fuck, you're throwing us off. You know, like, mm-hmm. you're confusing us here. We thought it was, hey, that's just another man on the other side trying to take my kid's yeah. food off the table, like they say.
I mean, Cerrone did fall face first, but then he
was, did? On the first
well,
one?
I mean, he fell down with his head went down. Mm-hmm. So he was on his knees.
Yeah.
But he just had this, like, he almost wasn't moving in a way where you would think, maybe he's just waiting for one shot to kind of spin and go to his back or something. I mean, it was just one of those scenarios that doesn't happen too often. I really don't feel like anybody's to blame it. I think it's just something that happens in our sport.
Yeah. But what that does now, let's stay with lightweights, it provides some clarity. Remember earlier this summer, we were like, wow, there's some big matches coming up. Mm-hmm. Well, those big matches have taken place. Habib defeated Poirier. We now have a unified champion, so Dustin's interim goes away. And Habib is the undisputed lightweight champion waiting for an opponent who we all believe to be Tony Ferguson. But how about when Justin Gaethje was asked at the end, what's next for you? Something about an Irishman. And he was like, that guy's retired. I want the winner of Habib and Tony. See how we've all moved. Yeah. We've all moved because there's no more these. There's no more, well, you know, there's that. I think we used to call him a wild card, a unicorn. He could shake things up. It doesn't appear that that's happening. It appears that Habib versus Tony should be next, with the exception of Ali Abdelaziz's idea, which is the GSP idea that nobody's feeling. Just when it comes to lightweights, to me it sounds like Habib versus Tony, and I think it sounds fair for Justin Gaethje to say, I want next. I'm not stepping in between Tony. I want the winner of that. Justin's now won 3 fights in a row, goes, and he should, you know, and I love the way that sounds, don't you?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. You know, really, like, this is what we talked about, I think, in our last episode, is slowly but surely, Conor's been just kind of pushed aside by the rest of the roster. Like, they're not really feeding into the things that he likes to do, create, stir up trouble. Fighters are just kind of ignoring him. They're like, that dude's retired. Let's just move on. If I'm Conor McGregor and I'm sitting on my couch and I hear that, I mean, that's when you pull that cigarette, right, and you're kind of nervous and you take that puff or a swig of water. I think he's got to be feeling that. But I thought Justin handled that perfectly.
Yep.
And really, it all just sort of makes sense. Now we just need that fight to go off.
Earlier this year, he was matching himself up with the winners of these fights. Remember when Masvidal knocked out Till? Remember when Pettis knocked out Wonderboy? You know, he was kind of cozying up to those guys. But Pettis has since lost. Diaz has since come back and won and now has a matchup with Masvidal. Mm-hmm. So that little trilogy that always hangs out there in the corner, that's not available right now. There's just a lot. Now, Conor McGregor is basically lining himself with fighters coming off a loss. So Poirier's coming off a loss. He's saying, I'll run it back. And of course, Pettis would be a possibility. Pettis doesn't have an opponent lined up. He's coming off the loss with Nate Diaz. But, yeah, I mean, I guess we're back to Cowboy Cerrone, except Cowboy Cerrone not coming off a win. Cowboy Cerrone's now coming off 2 losses. He's actually coming off the Ferguson loss and the McGregor loss. So who knows where things are going to line up here. Aya Quinta's busy. He's going to fight Hooker in New York. I'm going through the rankings here. And then I guess that Gregor Gillespie guy, the undefeated guy, he's out there. Paul Felder's coming off a win. You know, so there is another group of guys, but they're just not the top 5 guys.
It just doesn't have that pop, you know. It's something that whenever you hear Conor McGregor's name, there's always some sort of pop to that matchup. And some of the guys you mentioned just don't really have it. And it's funny because, like, Paul Felder versus Conor McGregor, hell yeah, I'd watch that. It'd be a fun fight. But there's something, he's built so much around that the lead up to a fight, it's almost become more important than the actual fight.
It has to have like heat and hatred.
Something,
almost.
Right?
That's
yeah.
kind of what happens. Yeah,
I think it's
so
best.
So Felder would have to be like a Captain America, a Superman, and make Conor McGregor like a villain, you know? And then I think they could do it. Because, yeah, on paper, those two stand-up fighters should provide a war. Mm-hmm. And frankly, now that I think about it, it's only because Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor have a history that you want to see that. Because remember, they had a little bit of a heated buildup. But since then, Poirier, man, you know, he's definitely grown up. He's got a kid now. He's won some big fights. He's won an interim belt. He's got more money. And I feel like I don't think he'd get too caught up in that. I think he got caught up in it the first time, and he says that's just not really my style. So even that matchup, I'm just wondering, you know, would that one be hot and heavy, like what people want out of McGregor fights?
I don't know. Because, see, the thing with Dustin is whenever you talk to him about that night, it's something that just seems like it's so fresh still. Even though it happened so long ago, like when you look at his face and he dials in his emotions, you feel like it just happened.
Who would you match him up against right now if you had your choice?
Dustin Poirier?
No, Conor McGregor.
Dustin Poirier. I think that's the one that makes the most sense at this point.
Dustin Poirier, huh? Let's run it back.
Yeah, because okay. You don't want to ruin a Gaethje matchup. I think you leave that little those three guys over there and just let that's going to work itself out. And then you deal with Conor as like a separate entity.
Mm-hmm. The nice thing is Cerrone's ready to roll at any point. And if we wait till November, the winner of Masvidal Diaz would be interesting.
The winner of Diaz, if one of them
because
wanted
they got that whole bad motherfucker belt going on, you know what I mean? And I'm sure Conor McGregor would say, did you not see me and my boys throw a dolly through a bus window? And we're bad motherfuckers. You know, I believe I qualify.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah. Well, all right. Again, that division definitely has more clarity and it's a lot more interesting. And I certainly hope. I don't know what kind of legs that rumor has of Habib versus GSP. I think it's just Ali really probably using a negotiation tool, a leverage tool or whatever to throw that out. But I've never been shy about saying I'll watch that fight at the new 165-pound class. Hey, Habib, you let go of 55, let these other guys bang it out. Mm-hmm. We create a new division for you. You go for history as a champ. GSP goes for history as a champ. I'm in for that as long as you don't disrupt what's happening at 155 because – I am getting a little tired of the whole champ era. Not because I don't want these fighters to go for the greatness. It's because of how it ties up the division. You know what I mean? Like when Henry Cejudo comes back, he's got to fight Benavidez first. And then he's got to fight one of these killers at 135. I mean, that's not fair to Aljamain Sterling and Peter Yan. They got to sit there and wait. Plus, if Cruz comes back, he's going to be ready to roll. We're going to get to Mr. Olympia in just a second. We saw Cody Garbrandt there. He feels like he's never far away because of the way things played out with the TJ Dillashaw, you know, controversy and how that may have affected those outcomes. So, I don't know. Again,
who do you got?
In which fight?
If Habib were to fight GSP, let's just say at the 165, who do you got? It's a good question, huh?
GSP.
GSP?
Yeah.
Man. Oh.
You?
GSP would have to defeat him in the one thing that he's been so solid in. Almost, yeah.
2 years since he beat Bisping. Holy crap. I mean, well, GSP's always had a great sprawl. He's very strong. And GSP might explode and take you down.
That's
and GSP's taken NC2A All-Americans down. Mm-hmm. And when he does, he beats them up. And that's somewhere where I haven't seen Habib. Now, that said, Habib's also pretty much taken down anyone he wants. Except the opponents, as of late, have been more on the striking side. Barbosa. McGregor, Poirier. He did take Rage and Al down and, you know, Trujillo, other guys that have had wrestling backgrounds. But still, I think, let's not forget, GSP's just also a bigger dude. He's also a bigger dude who hasn't competed in 2 years, but he's also a bigger dude who happens to be a legend and obsessed with perfection. And, you know, so I don't know. We'll tackle that if it happens.
GSP, huh?
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the light heavyweight division. We had two big matchups here, Misha Cirkunov and Glover Teixeira in the win column. Teixeira beat Nikita Krylov via split decision, and Misha Cirkunov beat Jimmy Crute in a Peruvian necktie submission.
That was an awesome fight.
Both fights were really, really entertaining. I mean, they went back and forth, whether it was on the feet or on the ground. I really, really enjoyed those two.
Yeah, that was a great fight. I mean, that submission was sick. And that fight was fun because it went back and forth. You know, that takedown at the beginning, man, that was brutal. He just went in, boom, put him on his ass. And then next thing you know, they're reversed. And then with the submission, I thought that was a great fight. That was so much fun. The card in general was just, I can't think of another word to describe it other than fun. It was just a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't want to insult the guys and said, oh my God, I've seen others with more star power. But what I mean by that is just more ranked opponents. I'm a hardcore, so I know who Todd Duffy is. But a lot of people have yet to see Todd Duffy. This was the first Todd Duffy fight, I think, under Reebok, maybe. Maybe even, I know for sure, under USADA. So, I mean, like, that's how long that guy's been away. And we'll get to him in just a second. But Teixeira, Serkinov, you know, even Nikita Krylov in the losing effort, I liked how Nikita Krylov won. He almost won that fight. Between the youngsters that are coming through, like Reyes and Johnny Walker and all those guys, and some of these veterans that still have a little bit of the gas left in the tank, it has rejuvenated that division, which I thought had about a year and a half ago. I was like, wow, the cupboard is bare, man. Davis left a Bellator. Bader left a Bellator. AJ retired. DC looks like he wants to be a heavyweight again. Like, well, what's going on here? And then John Jones couldn't stay out of trouble, and now all of a sudden it's fun again.
Well, it's funny because that for the longest time in the UFC, like, that was the marquee division. That was what was kind of carrying them for a while. That all those the Randy and Chuck and Tito and Babalu and Jeremy Horn and Vitor, yeah. Then you see guys come over like Rampage. Like, that was like a fun division.
What was going on with Michelle Pereira versus Tristan Connelly? This guy was acting like a gymnast. I know he's a capoeira guy, but he was like doing backflips, and I thought I was watching a Daffy Duck hits, cartoon, man, or something. And then he goes and starts gassing, and I'm like, bro, in your effort to entertain, you may have cost yourself, you know, the energy you need to fight against this other kid, you know, Tristan Connelly, who's obviously no joke if he's in the UFC, local kid as well. But that was one of the most unusual fights I've ever seen in my life.
I felt like I was watching pro wrestling at times because you had this little storyline of the kid taking the fight on short notice in his hometown, Paella not making weight, and then DC calling the fight. He did a great job calling that because he was pointing out a lot of good stuff, and he was talking about just, you know, how much did the guy leave it on the scale, and you could see that actually happening and how tired he was getting. And then you go back and you think, well, what if you didn't do backflips and flying knees? Like, how much would that have left you?
His walkout took 6 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was crazy too. I mean, that was a lot of fun.
How about Uriah Hall digging deep? Mm-hmm. I think he still has a little bit of Extreme Couture ties, but he moved over to Fortis MMA in Dallas. Shout out to those guys. And he said, look, man, he goes, I needed a fresh look. I still have my guys here. He goes, you know, I still talk to a lot of them. But, you know, he basically stopped Antonio Carlos Jr. from where he's strong. Because Antonio Carlos Jr. had some really great opportunities there by taking his back and getting the body lock. You know, this is where Uriah struggled in the past. And Uriah stayed very patient. Hell, he had him on his back when they were standing. He had his back when they were on the ground. But when Uriah Hall got it back to the feet, that jab, boom, boom, boom. You know, it looked like he broke ACJ's nose early on, and that affected his breathing and everything. But in the end, this thing was razor close. It was really, really fun to finally watch, you know, a fight that delivers when you say traditional grappler versus traditional striker. Because we hear that all the time, but this one really, really played out that way.
I actually scored this one for Shoeface. I don't know about you.
I had all.
It was one of those where I could admit it was a very close fight. But I also...
Because of the damage.
You had Hall?
Yeah, because of the damage I like seeing. And here's the thing. Even though ACJ did have dominant positions, a lot of times Uriah Hall just had his hands tied up. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple times he was underneath the chin or whatever, but...
Yeah, he was landing some shots. I mean, they weren't the most powerful shots, but he dominated the we're talking about round three, right? Because I think round one... It was a close round.
Well, even when he was standing on him, he was able to do that little swim move when he went underneath his arms. But
I had Shoeface winning round one. Then I thought Uriah Hall won round two, and I thought Shoeface won round three.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know they were so close. A lot of respect between those guys. I'd watch that one again, but I guess they're going to move on. But how about Uriah Hall saying, "Hey, Izzy, you need an opponent? Whitaker drops out, I'm in. He's kind of been saying that.
Why not, but right?
I love him in that setting, in the public setting when everyone's watching.
Yeah, why not? I mean, the fans really took to him that night. I think if you plant that seed, nothing bad's going to come from it.
The most disappointing thing of the night was just Todd Duffy's return. You know, there was a fight going on, man. They were swinging for the fences. And at times, Duffy really, really hurt Jeff Hughes. I thought he was going to finish him. Mm-hmm. Instead, with 1 minute left in the first round, there was an eye poke there, an accidental eye poke is how it was ruled. And because of this, Todd Duffy was not able to continue. We were able to hear some of the dialogue between Duffy and the ref, Duffy and the doctor, and basically it was just double vision. Double vision, you know, and he was just not going to be able to continue. The sad thing is this came on a week where Duffy really, really unloaded a little bit on MMA media and just kind of like, again, those frustrations he's had with the sport, probably towards the UFC, though he also says that I love the UFC. I want to be nowhere but the UFC. Again, his frustrations, I think, are because the media is not helping him highlight some of the struggles that fighters have because they're fighting in the UFC. Look, let's just get to the cut, you know, the meat and potatoes here. He wants to get paid more money just like every other fighter has. We run into this all the time, and this would have been a great chance for him to, if he finished, maybe put himself up for a fight bonus, at the same time get the win bonus, and obviously your job is always protected when you win. When you lose and you're a little controversial, you never know. I don't know where he sits. I certainly hope he gets another fight, but because so many fights like this have taken place in the past, there was just this general feeling I saw on Twitter that people felt like he should have continued.
Yeah. I thought he looked great up until that moment. Early, as crazy as this sounds, I thought he looked even more explosive and quicker with his strikes than he has in the past. And that's with the layoff. I thought he looked really good. He took some shots, but that's kind of like Todd Duffy. He'll take a few to give a few. As far as the eye poke goes, it's just so hard to really sit back and say that the guy could have continued because you don't know. Like, it's kind of like the groin shot. Sometimes something that looks horrible really just isn't as bad, and sometimes it's something that didn't look that bad is what really actually hurts.
Right. I thought I did see like a thumb in there.
Kind of went in, right?
Right, but I couldn't tell, like, you know, because we're not him. Daniel Cormier said it best, like, well, we don't know what he's seeing. Mm-hmm. And eye injuries are a very, very serious thing. Look at Michael Bisping, for example. At times it said he feels like he can't see out of that eye. And this is post, you know, all those operations that he's had. But the general perception is that these fighters need to tough out those situations. Oh, man, my heart broke for the guy because, again, just all the injuries that he's had, I really wanted him to continue, but I got to respect his decision. You know, he says he's seen double or he can't see, and you got another guy that can swat like Hughes can. Maybe he made the right decision. Who knows? I mean, only time will tell.
It's not so much like the poke sometimes as it is the nail, you know, like the scratch across the cornea or what. It could be any of those things. The only thing that I always disagree with is if he has 5 minutes, okay, why not make that decision once 5 minutes is up?
Because I don't think he has the 5 minutes. I think Todd was saying.
But that's what they were saying. I didn't think he does either. I think that's one of the dumbest rules that
we
still haven't
fixed.
Yeah, they should. If you get it for a groin shot, you should get it for an eye poke. The commentators were saying that, so I thought maybe that's something that I just overlooked. Mm-hmm. But if he has that time, or however long the doctor wants to give him, I think his best bet would have just said, give me a sec. Let me clear this
which
up.
Which is what he was saying, but he doesn't
but
have
But he
that
said
time.
The double vision thing.
Right.
And the double vision thing kind of hurts.
Just give me a sec. And then finally the doctor says, you either need to be ready to go or not. We don't have that kind of time. I mean, the referee did a great job of talking him through, mm-hmm. or seeing, you know. I didn't see Todd kind of, you know, a lot of people just rub their eyes out, and, mm-hmm. and that can, I don't know, that sometimes helps. I just saw him standing there and talking to the ref. But a lot of times they'll maybe grab a towel and clear things up or squirt some water. You know, I don't know. But I agree. There should be 5 minutes, but there isn't. And it sucked because I don't know. I would say he was in there for about 2 minutes. So I don't know if the other three clear things up or not. We'll have to do a follow-up with Todd. He lives in Vegas now, and we'll have to see how that goes. What did you think of his comments throughout the week?
I get where he's coming from on some of them. I think you can have a little bit of a debate with some of the things he was saying, but I get where he's coming from. It's just what you have to understand is your situation just kind of sucks because the UFC, the way they're built, the way it's a machine, they just stop for nobody. They right. really do. And I think sometimes you just have to come to an agreement in your head that you're just not worth as much as you think you are. As much as you wake up and you and everything you put into it, they just don't care. And that's what's sad. It's because there's so many of you and there's so many people willing to take short notice fights. There's so many people willing to do anything to get that shot that it kind of sucks for fighters. I understand where his frustration's coming from, but unless one voice almost does nothing, unless more of you come together as a group and do it, then it's going to mean something.
I agree. All right, we'll see how that one plays out. Attendance, 15,114. Total gate, 1,334,931 with those 56 cents. We got to have those 56 cents. Also, the bonuses. Interesting, we brought something up earlier. Now we're going to get to it. For one, Justin Gaethje, Misha Cirkunov, they got performance of the nights, 50,000 each. The fight of the night goes went to Tristan Colony versus Michelle Pereira. But remember you mentioned that the scale problems, how Pereira didn't make weight. Connolly doubles up. He gets 100 grand. That guy's weekend completely changed.
Oh, yeah. He was on a couch, man. I mean, well, maybe not. That's something that we always say. But I honestly, if the UFC just said, okay, only you get the bonus, I actually don't have a problem with that. I think it's cool. This is one of those instances where I kind of applaud the UFC and they say, all right, you get both of them. Because they could take that other 50 and just say, hey, we're going to give it to another guy, whoever had another good performance that night or whatever. I think it's very cool of them to do that. I think these are the type of chances that you take in your life, in your career, where they pay off.
Let's do some news nuggets. It's time for that. That is your wrap-up, by the way, for UFC on ESPN Plus 16. All right, look, there's not much to cover here. It wasn't the biggest week of MMA news, but I thought one thing that was interesting is in this whole Masvidal, Covington, Usman, one name that's been kind of floated off to the side is Tyron Woodley. He's been kind of playing it cool, but he thinks he may slide in there, goes, because if Covington's not going to step up, you know, he was a long reigning champion. He had 4 title defenses. He's saying, how about me versus Kamaru Usman? Masvidal's in New York with Diaz on November 2nd. Colby and the UFC can't agree to terms. What about me?
I read his comments, and I applaud him for doing that. It's something you have to do. You have to keep your name out there. But that first fight just didn't really leave you wanting to watch a rematch. And it's just not a fight that I think really makes sense. Like, they just have to figure this out.
But who would they put
Colby.
In? Because, look,
they Thompson's figure coming out the off Colby, 2 losses. The Colby situation.
Till's coming off 2 losses. Ben Askren's coming off a crazy loss. There's almost nobody else, man. When I'm looking through these USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings, Dos Anjos, I believe he's coming off losses. Ponzinibbio, I get all the way to number 11. You get to Ponzinibbio and Leon Edwards and those guys. Sure, maybe one of them could be moved up and we can do this. But when you have Rory McDonald and Douglas Lima and a few of the other guys, you know, you're now getting into the 10 to 15 range because, again, we rank all fighters.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations where you just have to figure it out. You got to figure out how to make Colby and Usman. And don't forget, like, if you look at Tyron Woodley's past, I think the UFC makes it pretty clear they probably don't want that fight.
Magomed Sharipov, Zabit Magomed Sharipov is out of UFC on ESPN 6. Co-main event against Calvin Kattar. Oh, my heart broke when I saw that one. I've been looking forward to that matchup. But I know they're not the sexiest names because they're not as well known, but I'm telling you, these two kids can fight.
They're the future.
Yeah, man.
That's what sucks
about
it. I
really, really wanted to see that fight, so that one's a little bit unfortunate. And then something else that was even maybe more unfortunate, only because it hits close to home, Access TV officials confirmed that LFA broadcasts are going to end as of this past Friday's last event. And not only that, Access TV fights as we know it, including the CEO Andrew Simon, good friend of the show, no longer with the company. Ron Kruk, Phoenix Carnivale, Pat Miletich, that whole crew, it's over, goes. That run is done after 12 some years, I believe. at least under, I know Andrew Simon was with them since around the time we started Tag Radio, and then before then, obviously, we had HDNet fights, and that whole existence is probably a 20-year run, maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I mean, you're just so used to something, and then to see it go away, but not just go away, just boom, like that, overnight. It's just gone. That was a tough one. A lot of good people involved with Access TV, a lot of good souls, and a lot of people that actually helped us out throughout our career, so... definitely want to thank Andrew Simon for everything that he's ever done for our show and coming on our show, and just their whole production team, everything that they were here for our 2000 show. I mean, that was great.
We were on their show back in LA a few times. I mean, they really, really contributed a lot. So congrats to them for that amazing run that they had. But basically, Anthem is an outlet. I believe they were the Fight Network or own the Fight Network. But those that group, who has also embraced combat sports for many years, they've acquired Access TV, and they have their own people in place, or they're going to put their own people in place, and that's why basically everyone else is out of a job here. But, you know, I think Mark Cuban's now officially out of the MMA business.
Yeah.
So there you have it. All right, listen, we'll tackle more of those on Thursday. We got to bounce here pretty soon. But any final things to say goes, I guess let's touch real quick on Mr. Olympia. That was fun. The boss, Simon Samano, said, hey, listen, man, we got to scramble and put a team together. And me, you, and Kenny went out to the Las Vegas Convention Center and caught up with some fighters. Pretty interesting. I don't know if you actually had a chance to break away and just walk around and see, but that's basically one of the biggest conventions for the bodybuilding industry.
I tried, but I couldn't get through the aisles. Everybody's walking with their arms so wide.
Pretty much.
Like two people.
Our focus was a Limitless lounge that they had there. They're a company that's basically, they were featuring MMA fighters there. And they got, you know, their own product going on. MMA fighters and WWE wrestlers. One that goes didn't seem to recognize very well.
Yeah.
He just elbowed her in the poop.
I still don't remember her name.
Yeah. Mandy Rose.
Mandy Rose, yeah.
But anyway, that's a whole other story we can get to. Maybe we'll do that on Gorgeous George and Goes. But it was fun catching up with some super big names like Anthony Pettis, Cody Garbrandt.
Ken Shamrock, Chuck Liddell.
You guys can check those interviews out there. Some of them are on MMA Junkie. But that was fun, right? Going out on the field, kind of expanding on what our job is now.
Yeah, Francis Ngannou. There were a lot of people there. Unfortunately, Nick Diaz was supposed to be. I think he got there the next day, right?
The next day, yeah. And GSP and Anderson Silva, that's where the face-off came off. I know you guys have seen it all, but they had the face-off there, and it was at that Limitless Lounge inside of the Mr. Olympia. And it was fun to get out there. But again, I bring this up only because our show is no longer a daily two-hour show. It's two times a week. It's a podcast. It's Mondays and Thursdays, and some of our other duties have been those off-guard series that you've seen and assignments like this one. So hopefully you guys keep supporting us with that and keep the retweets up and the shares and all that. We won't hate you if you do it. All right, it's time to get out of here, Goes. We'll be back on Thursday, folks, with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. Go out there and be a champion.